Anderson will put the brakes on and dribble this one out. And the Baylor Bears do indeed bear down to knock off the unbeaten Gonzaga Bulldogs and claim the school's first men's basketball championship and just the second men's basketball title in the history of the state of Texas. Baylor 86, Gonzaga 70, wire-to-wire winner for the Baylor Bears, national champions in 2021.
Baylor gets it done last night. They led from start to finish, and yet people think it's this big upset. It is not. If Baylor didn't have COVID-19, they very well and probably would have been undefeated going into this game, just like Gonzaga, and we would have been guaranteed an undefeated team in college basketball. So, once again, it is easy to label things when you haven't watched the whole basketball season, much like labeling the greatest game ever played was Saturday. Because it was the most recent game, it was the greatest game ever played. We'll talk about that coming up in a moment. Welcome to Sports Ticket, Wade and Dusty with you. We're talking a lot more about the national championship game last night, and I'll explain to you why you shouldn't be surprised. You should have actually seen it coming. It was Baylor who, honestly, might have been the best team all year long. If it wasn't for COVID-19, Baylor might have played Gonzaga and beat him the first time in December. And might have been undefeated going into that game last night. We'll never know. And what about the impact of COVID-19 on both of those teams and how it could have maybe affected the outcome of last night's game? I'll explain that coming up as well. There is a comparison you can make to Super Bowl 55 between the Buccaneers and the Chiefs. But first, local sports information turned over to Dusty.
Yes, lots of local sports actually coming up here today. High school baseball and softball doubleheaders this afternoon for the Beloit Trojans as they are hosting the Minneapolis Lions. Doubleheaders start at 4 o'clock in Beloit this afternoon. You can watch those games online on the Beloit Trojan channel at ncksports.com. In softball, Beloit 2-0, playing their first league games. Minneapolis 2-2 overall and 2-2 in the league. And then in baseball, Beloit comes in 0-4, 0-2 in the league, while Minneapolis is 2-0 overall and 2-0 in league play. Again, action begins in Beloit this afternoon for both baseball and softball at 4 o'clock. Also in baseball and softball, Concordia is hosting Sacred Heart this afternoon. Doubleheader starts at 4:30. And the Sylvan Lucas Lincoln softball team is at Ellis. Doubleheader starts at 3 o'clock this afternoon in Ellis. So that's a look at baseball and softball for our area teams. Many of our area track and field teams will be getting their season started today at the St. John's Invitational, which begins at 3 o'clock this afternoon. Multiple area teams starting the season. Those are St. John's, Lakeside, Sylvan Lucas, Thunder Ridge, and Tipton. Osborne, Rock Hills, and Lincoln also competing from the area for their second meets of the season. And the St. John's Track and Field Invitational will get underway at 3 o'clock this afternoon at Trojan Field in Beloit with field events. And then running events will start there about 4 o'clock, I believe, is what the schedule has. If you're looking to get out and enjoy some track and field, that's at Trojan Field today in Beloit. So that's what's going on as far as local sports are concerned. All the local schedules for every team can be found at ncksports.com. So enjoy the spring sports season here in 2021 if you have a chance.
Okay. Yeah, cut.
We'll hear from Ben Letourneau here from St. John's. And this is his first year as the head coach of St. John's. And he talks about having that first meet at home and the expectations with the group here for the first year around.
Kind of a challenge this year, and I know it will be for all the coaches. As a new coach, and Coach Perez is working with me too. So both of us are new to coaching high school track. Just trying to get things figured out. And a little bit of a challenge where nobody had a track season last year of where to place people as far as events, where to place people as far as marks in those events. So there'll be a lot of learning for everybody. And we do have a good squad out. We've got 24 altogether. Just really looking forward to having that first meet be here at home. And just got the home crowd. All the helpers will be our parents, our teachers, just people that we're familiar with. So a great way to kick off the season.
And that starts at 3 o'clock this afternoon, the St. John's Track and Field Invitational over there at Trojan Field in Beloit. So looking forward to it and looking forward to see how our area athletes compete as well this afternoon.
All right, last night Baylor wins the national championship, beating Gonzaga 86-70. It's another great start by Baylor. I mean, you look at the tournament, if you watch the tournament, you watch the games, Baylor seemed to get out to a great start in almost every single game. They played great against Wisconsin in the second round, got out to a nice, comfortable lead. They were up big on Arkansas. They start the Elite Eight game, Houston in the Final Four, and they did the same thing last night to Gonzaga. Jumped out to a 16-4 lead and never trailed and did a wonderful job defensively. They were the team with more energy, more emotion, and how can you not think that couldn't have happened last night? Like, I was amazed by how many people seemed to be stunned by Gonzaga's lack of energy and emotion. I'm like, did you watch the game Saturday?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, seriously, did you watch the game Saturday? Because I did, and Baylor cruised. Their game was easy. Gonzaga had to do everything in their power to win against UCLA. And then the emotion of a 35, 40-foot bank shot to win the game. And remember, they played the late game.
Mm-hmm.
And then a quick turnaround on Monday. So, you know, I hear a whole bunch of people saying, well, Baylor was a more athletic team. Baylor was a faster team. And they were, last night, they did. They looked like the more athletic team. They did look like the quicker team. But I do have to ask the question, what would have happened if Gonzaga didn't have to go through what was just an as a fan, I was emotionally wrecked.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't even have a dog in the show. I mean, I didn't have a dog in the fight. And I was, like, spent. So imagine what it's like to be a part of that game. And Baylor, that was easy against Houston. That was a methodical wearing down of Houston. Mm-hmm. They jumped out the big lead. Houston never was in that game.
No.
But people act like we're, that human beings are just the rechargeable robots and that they automatically are going to have the same energy and passion. Listen, your body only lets you do so much. Your mind can tell you that this is the national championship game. We got to match their athleticism. We got to match their speed. We got to match their emotion, their intensity. And it might take a while to adjust. And I thought it took Gonzaga a while to adjust because they had not faced a team like that all year long.
No.
They hadn't. And their conference caught up to them last night. I hate to say it, but it did. The lack of anybody really legitimately great in their conference to challenge them came back to bite them last night, I think. But also probably a bigger thing that bit them was having to go basically a 15-round slug'em heavyweight fight on Saturday night against UCLA. But Baylor, don't take anything away from them. They were fantastic last night. And you really do have to wonder, if there was no COVID stoppage for Baylor, would they have been the first team since 76 to go undefeated and win it all? Think about their two losses. KU, they didn't even look close to the same team. And I'm sorry, I follow KU, I watch KU all the time. Even when they won that game, you knew that wasn't the Baylor that was Baylor. You knew Kansas played well, but Baylor just wasn't Baylor. That was right after coming off the COVID pause. They had one game and almost lost to Iowa State before that.
Mm-hmm.
So, and they say it took usually 3-4 games to get back into some kind of groove, and it took Baylor that long. Big 12 tournament, lost to Cade Cunningham and Oklahoma State. I truly believe that Baylor would have been undefeated. Now, I think Baylor would have been undefeated going into the NCAA tournament without any COVID pauses. I do believe that because they were the best team along with Gonzaga all year long prior to the COVID-19 pauses. What I don't know is, would the pressure of being undefeated in the tournament have maybe would have caught Baylor against Arkansas in the Elite Eight or the Sweet 16 against Villanova? Because Villanova game, that was a tight game until about the final 6-7 minutes.
Down by 7.5.
They were, yeah. But then 6-7 minutes left, they had to, you know, kind of grind it out, and then they dominated the final 5-6 minutes.
Yep.
And then Arkansas, they led comfortably, but then things got a little bit tight there late. If you're undefeated, do you handle things a little bit differently? And then, of course, you're going to the national championship game. You're going up against a team that isn't undefeated, has all the pressure in the world on their shoulders, and you have already lost one or two games. And, you know, I go back. I know it's high school versus college, but Lance Bergman, I'll never forget him telling us that the best thing that probably ever happened to St. John's Tipton when they won the state title in high school basketball, I forgot what year it was.
14.
The best thing that ever happened to them was they lost a game. They lost a game because that kind of got them – like, okay, you know, if we don't bring it every time, or we can be beaten. We're not invincible. And that loss actually helped them. Now, would you love to be undefeated, have an undefeated perfect season? Yeah, but what would you rather have? Runner-up 31-1 like Gonzaga? Or would you rather be Baylor national champions with two losses? I'll take the latter. I'll always take the latter.
Absolutely.
Would you rather be the Giants or the Patriots? I'd rather be the Giants, who beat the Patriots in the Super Bowl, and the Patriots finished 18-1. It is so hard to go undefeated in tournament-style play, let alone a whole season. Like college football, you see undefeateds all the time. That's going to happen. First of all, you don't have a tournament. You have what you call a four-team playoff, and it's an exclusive invitation. So college football is becoming harder to go undefeated, but it happens very often.
Mm-hmm.
College women's basketball has happened a lot with UConn. But outside of UConn, it doesn't happen very much. And there's beginning to be more parity with women's basketball, a little bit. I think we saw that this year. But there's still basically eight programs that are, you know, further better than everybody else. Every once in a while, a team sneaks in like Arizona the other night. It happens from time to time. But usually it's your top teams in the bracket go on and win the national championship in women's basketball. But college men's basketball, and you can go back and look at it year in and year out. You can take the time, or you can just trust what I'm telling you. You can go back and look every single time, and you do the math, and the favorite usually doesn't win the tournament. Mm-hmm. The favorite, KU fans know all about that. Duke knows about that as well. Kentucky knows about that. Gonzaga knows about that. North Carolina knows about that. It rarely happens. Ask UNLV in 1991. Ask Kentucky in 2015. Their last two teams that were undefeated and in this position and didn't even make it to the national title game. And Gonzaga, you know, if one call goes the other way and a block's called on Timmy, they don't make it to the national championship game either. And if Suggs didn't hit a 35-40-foot banker, they might lose in double overtime. It is so hard to go perfect, especially the tournament bracket. Now, if you're clearly the best team and it was a NBA playoff situation, yeah, that happens a lot. In NBA, you see it all the time. The best team usually wins. Not always, but usually the best team wins because you play a best out of seven. Mm-hmm. You know, hockey, usually the best team wins, although we've seen some one seeds get knocked off and upset. It happens in a series. But Gonzaga and Baylor were the two best teams in college basketball all year long. So we get the national championship game. And as much as we were so excited about UCLA and Gonzaga and how amazing that game was, it honestly robbed us of a great game last night. Now, which one do you rather have? You take it whenever you can get it, right? Mm-hmm. But I would have rather have seen this game Saturday that we had between Gonzaga and UCLA. I would rather have seen it been Gonzaga-Baylor play out last night like the Gonzaga-UCLA game in the national championship game, because last night Baylor controlled that game. Baylor dominated that game, and Baylor clearly was better. And then I've got people that are telling me that Baylor would win that game 9 out of 10 times. Disagree. I think Baylor would win it 6 or 7 out of 10. I think if it was a best-of-seven series, I think Baylor would win 4 to 2. Maybe they'd win in 5. Maybe it'd go 7. I'll split the difference. I'll say 6. But it isn't a best-of-5. It's not a best-of-7. It's not a best-of-10. It's one game. It's one game, and Baylor brought it last night and played fantastic, and the key is you get off to a great start. And that's what Baylor was able to do for most of this tournament. Teams were playing catch-up against them. And when you play catch-up against Baylor with how good they are defensively, it is very, very – and there, and by the way, we talk about how good they are defensively, but offensively, when they're making shots like they were last night, and they were the number one three-point shooting team all year long, I don't think you beat them.
No.
And last night, I don't think anybody was going to beat Baylor. And nobody beat them in the tournament. Baylor was fantastic. Scott Drew on the defensive effort of his Bears.
I mean, we're really good defensively. And I thought we made things tough tonight. Gonzaga missed some shots that they probably normally make. But really credit our guys for making everything difficult. Coach Jacobs was on their staff there and obviously familiar with the program. He had a great scouting report. But credit the players then for executing it.
Baylor did execute. They had a great game plan. And here's Drew on the first national championship for Baylor. And believe it or not, only the second college men's basketball championship for the state of Texas. Texas Western's the other. University of Texas has never won a national championship in basketball, but Baylor has.
You're excited. And to see the Baylor fans be able to celebrate and cheer, to see the city of Waco be able to celebrate and cheer, to see the state of Texas. I mean, look how much great basketball we have from high school, AAU, junior college, college. And we haven't won a national championship since 66. So it's long overdue for the state. And, again, just so pleased for all them. We have an unbelievable administration, Mac Rhodes and President Livingstone, that have given us every resource to be successful. And the guys that have sacrificed for 18 years leading up to this, and these guys that were able to take it home. And it was great to see Freddie and Devontae and Tristan in the stands. And we knew last year they really wanted to have a chance to do this, and we weren't going to have any regrets with this tournament. We wanted to leave it all on the court, and really blessed with the effort everyone gave us tonight.
Baylor was the best team in this tournament. They proved it. They did it last night. Biggest stage, and flat out dominated the number one team in America all year long. These teams were supposed to have played in December. They did not. More on that in a moment. You know, another thing that's overlooked, I hear this, while Baylor is just clearly superior to Gonzaga athletically. If Jalen Suggs doesn't pick up two quick fouls, isn't this game a little different?
Oh, I mean,
think about it. Gonzaga was down 12 because their best player was on the bench. I mean, you take away – now, Baylor has three great guards, and Flagler's not bad either. But if Baylor – if Butler gets two fouls in the first minute or two last night, that game's different for Baylor.
Oh, yeah, sure.
So it's like it's so easy to just paint a broad brush and say, well, Baylor's just – they're the better team. They were. Yes, absolutely. No denying that. They were last night. But to sit here and tell me, all of a sudden Gonzaga went from one of the greatest teams of all time to having one bad night, and suddenly they can't beat Baylor more than once in a 10-game series? That's called overreaction. It's called knee-jerk reaction. Kind of like, oh, that game was the greatest game of all time. No, there was a game last week that was pretty good. Did you forget about it already? Happens all the time in sports. It's the recency bias, as I like to call it. So, Baylor won the championship last night. They're excited. They should be. They had to battle COVID. So did Gonzaga, by the way. They had to battle COVID and had a pause in their program. And it robbed us of a great game in December, which was going to be played in Indianapolis, between Gonzaga and Baylor. And I saw somebody post on Twitter, and I thought it was an interesting point. How big of an impact did not playing that game in December have on the national championship game last night? And it really got me to thinking, because I thought that was a great question. Let's break it down a little bit. If Gonzaga and Baylor played in December, obviously if Baylor won, Baylor would have been the favorite last night. Also, if Baylor would have won, there would be no subplot of a team going undefeated, and Gonzaga would have played with perhaps less pressure. The other thing is, Gonzaga, Mark Few is a great coach, and Scott Drew has turned out to be a great coach. What would have happened if Gonzaga and Baylor played in December, regardless of the result? But let's play it this way. How about this? Gonzaga and Baylor played for the first time all season last night, correct? And yeah. Baylor won convincingly. What if that happened in December? What if Baylor beat Gonzaga 86-70 back in December? Now Gonzaga goes in the national championship game in a rematch against Baylor, and they can make adjustments. They've seen Baylor. The team that wins the first matchup doesn't really need to make as many adjustments, do they? The team that lost has to make adjustments. And then the team that made the adjustments in the rematch, if they get off to a good start at halftime, now the team that won the first game has to make the counter adjustments, but they don't have, you know, 24, 48 hours to prepare for it. They have, you know, 15 minutes at halftime to figure it out. And I go back to, and here's your comparison for you Chiefs fans out there. I still think to this day that if the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and the Kansas City Chiefs did not play in the regular season, that the Chiefs, I think, would have won the Super Bowl. Now, I say that with hesitation because their left and right tackles were backups. So I'm not as confident about saying that. But I will say this. I think it would have been a much different game, even with backup tackles. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers benefited greatly from playing the Chiefs during the regular season. Tyreek Hill had 200 yards receiving in the first quarter. He made the Buccaneers' man-to-man defense look stupid. The Chiefs' offense made the Buccaneers look horrific. And the Chiefs made the defense of the Buccaneers look like one of the worst defenses in National Football League. And they were one of the best going into the game. Then the Chiefs messed up on a couple opportunities. The Bucs came back, made it interesting, but the Chiefs still won the game. The Buccaneers took that. You can't simulate the speed of Tyreek Hill, Mecole Hardman, and others, and Travis Kelce. You cannot simulate it in practice in Tampa during Super Bowl week. You can't. But you already played the Chiefs, so now you know what it's like. Because how many times do you see teams go up against the Chiefs and go, whoa, you know, their speed is legit. It's better than we thought. And they have to adjust defensively, and it's too late, and the Chiefs hit these big, big plays. The Buccaneers benefited greatly from the first matchup. The Chiefs, quite honestly, didn't make many adjustments. It's still amazing that they thought they were going to see more man-to-man defense, which is still just mind-boggling to me. But anyway... But the point is the Chiefs didn't make a lot of adjustments because they had were the ones that won, honestly, fairly easily. I know they won by three, but they were in control of that game. Mm-hmm. The Buccaneers were the ones that had, the onus was on them. They're the ones that were run out of the building. Tyreek Hill was doing backflips at the one-yard line, and he was on the phone saying, nobody can stop me, okay? But the Buccaneers used that experience in the first matchup And they absolutely used it to their advantage and whipped the Chiefs in the Super Bowl. Did it help that the Chiefs were missing a left and right tackle? Absolutely. But the Buccaneers made adjustments, and the Chiefs didn't make the counter-adjustments. What would have happened if Gonzaga and Baylor played in December? What if COVID-19 didn't ruin that game? What if Gonzaga had to play 40 games like you normally do to make it the national championship instead of 32? Would have Gonzaga still been undefeated? Maybe, maybe not. But if they played Baylor, they might have lost that game. And then Gonzaga, oddly to say this, it is odd to say this, but Gonzaga might have had an edge going to national championship game in a rematch because Baylor's like, well, you know, we beat them by 16. We pretty much punked them. We're the better team. We'll be fine. Mm-hmm. And then Gonzaga's the one that comes out all the full of energy and comes out to a 12-point lead. I think it's an interesting point. We'll never know. It's all hypothetical, of course. But I think it is intriguing and interesting to discuss because I do believe that when two great teams play each other, and I'm talking, notice what I said, not a good versus a great. Not an average versus a good. Not an average versus a great. I'm talking when two great teams play, and those two teams last night are great teams. I know Gonzaga didn't play great. They're two great teams. They were the two great best teams all year long. There's no question about it. Mm-hmm. Those, when two great teams play each other, you rarely see a rematch where the team that won the first wins the second. And if you do, it's usually a dogfight to the end, and it's a tight, tight game the second time around. So when people tell me, well, Baylor would win this 9 out of 10 times or 8 out of 10 times, and you might, maybe you'd be right. I don't know. Once again, hypothetical. You are really underestimating Mark Few and his coaching staff. You're also underestimating the heart that Gonzaga has. And if these two teams played again, let's say, for instance, they would play what would happen if college basketball did what the Super Bowl does? The Super Bowl gives you 2 weeks to prepare. What if they would have gave a whole week? So the Saturday, the Final Four is over, and the national championship game is this Saturday between Gonzaga and Baylor. I think last night's game is different. I do. I don't. I have no idea if Gonzaga still wins. Grant Hill made a very interesting point last night, and a lot of people didn't hear it. Grant, did you catch this? When Duke knocked off Kentucky in what many people think is the greatest game of all time in 1992 in the regional final. Leitner's shot, of course. Everybody knows that by now. Duke won that game 104-103. And then they had the week off, even though they practiced. That got them to the Final Four. And Grant Hill said last night, he said, we were still spent. And we came out flat a week later after the crazy win over Kentucky. We were flat and didn't match the intensity and emotion of Indiana a week later. And he said, and Gonzaga just played Saturday night. And I thought that was a tremendous point. Mm-hmm. That's coming from a guy that knows what he's talking about because he's experienced it. So let's not underestimate what UCLA did for Baylor. What UCLA did for Baylor, and that was they made Gonzaga work. And here's the point going back to the Power 5 conference comment I made earlier. Gonzaga, not once this year did they have to play two extremely tough games in a three-day span. Not once. Go back and look it up. Mm-hmm. Not once. In the Big 12, Baylor's got to do that a lot. Baylor could have Texas on a Saturday, KU on a big Monday. So mm-hmm. Baylor and the Power 5s have that. The WCC, which is the conference Gonzaga's in, there was no top second team. And I'm not going to say that Baylor had, you know, there was a great second team in the Big 12. KU finished second. We all know KU wasn't great this year. But the point being is that when you play against that great competition, but the Big 12 might have been the best conference in America, them in the Big 10. When you play against that competition and you play against a really good team on a Saturday and you turn around and got to play a Monday night, a big Monday game, Baylor's used to this. Now, Gonzaga, sure, they played two games in 3 days, but they didn't. They played like St. Mary's, then BYU. Mm. They didn't play UCLA and then Baylor. They didn't play, you know, they didn't play Iowa and then Baylor two games in 3 days. So, I do wonder if that played a role in this game as well. Here's Mark Few. His team so close, so close, so close to being perfect.
It's a really, really tough one to end a storybook season on. But listen, Baylor, they just beat us. They beat us in every facet of the game tonight and deserve all the credit. And obviously, we're all disappointed in here. But, you know, as I told the guys, like, you know, you make it this far and you're 31-0 going into the last 40 minutes of the season, there's absolutely nothing you should ever feel bad about. And they'll look back on this season as time passes as something just amazing and incredible. But, again, just hats off to Baylor. They dominated us on both sides of the ball.
Listen, I'm going to tell you this until I die and I'm 6 feet under. Always take the field. If you're a betting person, always take the field. I don't care how dominant a team is. In a tournament format, always take the field. I was wrong when I picked USC to beat Gonzaga. Absolutely. Absolutely wrong. But here's the thing. They didn't win the national championship by beating USC, did Gonzaga. No. They had to win six games. Everybody knows that. And to me, they should have never been an overwhelming favorite to win at all. I never bought into that. You know why? Because I thought Illinois was really good. I thought Michigan was really good. And I thought Baylor was really good. I mean, everybody just acted like Gonzaga was clearly the best team all year long. If Baylor doesn't have COVID, I think you could have argued Baylor was just as good. And they obviously proved it last night. Take the field. I'm giving you betting advice right now, okay? Max, are you listening? Take the field. If anybody personally wants the wager and says Gonzaga's going to win it all, before the term begins, you say, and I can have the field? Because they're saying they're taking Gonzaga. Take that bet. You know what? If Gonzaga goes undefeated this year, fine, you lost. Next year, somebody tells you they're picking a team, go fine, I'll take the field. You take the field, you'll come out ahead.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
That's proven.
Yeah.
I mean, and this is why I didn't think Gonzaga was going to win at all. I don't think Gonzaga is as good as the 1991 UNLV team. I don't think they're as good as the Kentucky team from 2015. Those two teams played more games, but also those two teams, I thought, were better athletically than Gonzaga. Gonzaga was a great team. I'm not taking anything away from them. They're a great team. And I could argue that the strength of the tournament field this year maybe wasn't as good as it was when UNLV and then Kentucky in 2015. And Gonzaga made it to the championship game, something that UNLV couldn't do in a rematch against Duke in 91. And Kentucky couldn't do it against Wisconsin and finished 38-1 in 2015. And I'll even bring up KU as an overwhelming favorite in 97 with just one loss in double overtime to Missouri. And they couldn't even get out of the Sweet 16 and lost to eventual champion Arizona. If you are picking a golfer in a golf tournament, take the field. If somebody says, I'm taking Tiger, say, I'll take the field. Now, there for a stretch, when Tiger was dominant, you would have lost. Mm-hmm. But if you just kept doing that every tournament for 5 years, trust me, you would have come out ahead. You play the field. You play the field. You play the field. You play the field. If it's a best of seven series and you go in the NBA playoffs, say, I'm taking the Lakers, or I'm taking the Nets, and you say, I'll take the field. Now, you might, you know, you still might come out ahead, but you probably won't make as much money doing it each and every year. Because in the NBA, usually the best team does win more often because it's a series. Same thing in baseball. Usually the best team wins. Not always. We saw the Royals in 14 as a wild card make it. We've seen wild card teams win the Super Bowl. I mean, the Buccaneers weren't even, they didn't even get a first round bye. They won the Super Bowl. The Chiefs were the favorite. And going into the season, we talked about NFL. There are some people saying the Chiefs. I said, take the field. I'm a Chiefs fan. We talked about it. You even said it, too. I remember you go, well, I love the Chiefs, and I think they'll get there, but he goes, the odds are against it. And that's exactly what you're doing. You're playing the odds. That's why I bet against the Chiefs next year. I hope I'm wrong. I want the Chiefs to make the Super Bowl, win it all. But the odds of the team making the Super Bowl 3 years in a row are very, very difficult. The odds are against the Chiefs to make it to the Super Bowl 3 years in a row, and the odds of them winning two out of three in 3 years is against them as well. Now, you can bet money on it. You might lose money on it. Very possible. I'm not saying you go out and bet money and put the house and the mortgage and your kids' college education online. That's not what I'm saying at all. But if somebody approaches you and it's involved in a tournament format, they come up to you in a tournament format, or maybe even in a playoff format like you have in the National Football League. I would stay away from college football, by the way, because there is no full college football playoff, let's be honest. Now, women's basketball is an exception when UConn was dominant. I would have taken UConn, and that obviously worked out. I'm talking men's college basketball.
Rough on the dull on clay, right?
Yes, right, right.
I'm trying to think of my mind, there's very, very few exceptions, but those are definitely two of them.
But when you think of college, I'll just specifically say, college men's basketball is the biggest example. You know what? And maybe even baseball to an extent nowadays. There's a lot more parity. But because one or two pitchers can dominate a series. We saw that with Bumgarner against the Royals with the Giants in 14. Pro football, I think there's still times where you get the dominant team that wins it. Although, let's be honest, the last 2 years, the Chiefs weren't the favorite. They weren't the team, and they won it all, remember? They weren't even the number one seed a couple years ago. Not this year, they were the favorite, and then they got blown out in the Super Bowl. So, you really, when it's a tournament format, and if you want to stick with college men's basketball, the history, the proof is in the pudding. The last undefeated team to go undefeated and win the championship was the year I was born. And I'm old. That was 45 years ago. It tells you how old I am. So we will be guaranteed to at least have 46 years between the last undefeated team and if anybody goes undefeated next year. We're guaranteed it's going to be 46 years at minimum. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to say something right now, and I know it seems that it's going to be pretty, you may say, well, wow, that's really going out there. Maybe you don't feel that way. As long as you play 30 or more games, and the schedule stays this way, 32 games or 40, we go back to normal, we'll be looking at 38, 39, 40, 41 games, no team in college men's basketball is ever going to go undefeated again during my lifetime. I'm just going to say it. And that means that if I live to be 85 over the next 40 years, no team's going to go undefeated in college men's basketball. I'm just going to put it out there. The pressure is immense.
Mm-hmm.
The pressure is immense. You're going to get everybody's best shot, not only during the tournament, but during the regular season, too. So the pressure builds, and nobody is used to handling that pressure. Mark Few had never been in that situation before, undefeated going national title game. None of those players had. Who would? The only people that have had experience doing that in the last 45 years is UNLV in 1991. Of course, Indiana State with Larry Bird in 79, but I'll go to more of the modern era for me. 1991 UNLV, 2015 Kentucky. None of those kids, none of those coaches had ever been through that. And then they had not been through that. UNLV did not go undefeated when they whipped Duke in 1990 by 30 in the championship game. They did not go undefeated that year. Next year, had everybody pretty much back. They were the heavy favorite, and they did a great job all the way until the rematch against Duke. And there is the rematch card I just played, didn't I? Duke and UNLV, there was a year between games. And Duke took what they learned from a butt-kicking and beat them the next year. So thus, if Gonzaga played Baylor in December, I think last night's game is different. I really, truly do. I'm not saying Gonzaga would have won, but I think it would have been different. So when you win a national championship, you need a little bit of luck on your side. Baylor caught Gonzaga really in a great spot coming off of a tough game against UCLA. And they're also playing a team that knows they are one win away from making history. Mm-hmm. And if all you got to do is look at teams that have been one win away from making history when it comes to teams that try to repeat, or even recently trying to repeat, is extremely hard to do. See the Chiefs. See the Seahawks, who if they give the ball to Marshawn Lynch, repeat. The Patriots haven't repeated here recently, okay? They did back in 03, 04. There's a reason that nobody's repeated in basically 20 years in the National Football League. I mean, it's hard to get there, and that's what makes what the Chiefs did so, so impressive, getting there back-to-back years. The Royals, they didn't go back-to-back winning it all. It's pretty. It's tough to get to the place 2 years in a row, let alone win it both times. And then if you come across a team that you've already faced, that makes it even more difficult. Now add in the fact you're undefeated. And the pressure is immense. And I don't think Gonzaga tightened up last night. I just think Baylor hit him in the mouth and Gonzaga couldn't respond. Yeah. And Suggs being in foul trouble did not help things at all. And a lot of people have forgotten that little point after the game, forgetting that Suggs missed so much time early in the game when the game really, honestly, was basically decided. Looking back at it now, Jared Butler was fantastic. Davion Mitchell was amazing. Flagler's a good kid off the bench. Mark Vidal's underrated. The bigs for Baylor as a whole are underrated. They're so athletic. They're so good at screaming. How many shots did Gonzaga have that were rejected out of nowhere?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and so Baylor was the more athletic team to me. They were the more energetic team. They were the more emotional team. The energetic, the energy and the emotion, that, I think, was an advantage for Baylor because Gonzaga was spent from Saturday. The athleticism part, I think, is flat out Baylor was the more athletic team. It was what it was. But if you go up against a team that's more athletic and you can't match their intensity with the energy and the emotion, and they're already more athletic than you, you get a game like you did last night. Now, having said that, if Baylor goes out there and misses those wide-open three-pointers, and they go 2-for-21 like Kansas did in the Elite Eight against VCU in 2011, the game's completely different. But Baylor was so impressive in the Final Four. They won by 19, and then they beat Gonzaga by 16, and it was a bit of a dud in regards to wanting a great, great game. The odds of them living up to the game on Saturday was just insurmountable. I was hoping we'd at least have a tight game. But my prediction for the game was Baylor by 6 points. That was my prediction. I voted on your poll. I picked Baylor to win. And I've said all along, as you know, in this whole thing, that I've been taking the field versus Gonzaga. In my bracket, I had Gonzaga making it to the championship, losing to Illinois. I had the wrong team beating them. But I didn't have Gonzaga winning it in my bracket. A lot of people did. And USC, I thought, was going to knock them off. They didn't. But Baylor, when they played Wisconsin in the second game of this tournament, I watched them play that game, that first half. I was like, oh, my Lord, they're back. They're back to where they were. When I saw that performance,
after
I was
that,
like,
there was, like, no question in my mind.
They were going to, right, I agree. I agree. I mean, because for me,
Who knows, but get to the championship, no question.
I agree because
that's how I felt.
Because in my bracket, I had Ohio State beating Baylor in the Elite Eight to move on. Ohio State got knocked off the first day of the tournament. Baylor moved on to the second round. And then Baylor, what they did to Wisconsin, and I watched that game, I'm like, there is nobody that's touching Baylor until the championship game. And then, of course, helping that Illinois gets beat in the second round, too. So then Baylor caught a very favorable matchup against Houston. It was a great matchup for Baylor. Absolutely. We even talked about it last week. Mm-hmm. So now Gonzaga-UCLA, that was a game where, you know, nobody gave UCLA a chance. I kept warning people that, you know, UCLA is going to cover the spread, and it could be a better game than people think. I didn't think UCLA could score 90 and score with them. I have to admit, I never saw that coming.
About yesterday, it's like
No way.
We did not think blow for blow type of game they'd be able to hang with them.
No, if you would have told me that UCLA is going to lose in overtime by 3, I would have told you probably 73-70, not 93-90. I mean, UCLA played great, and I'm going back to that game for a moment. Because this is what we do in society as sports fans, and maybe it's our job as a sports talk show to bring you down to earth just a little bit, okay? And be the sense of realism. Baylor's one of the greatest teams of all time. I saw people putting that out there. Maybe. Because they played two great games in the Final Four? Maybe. They played great in the tournament? Yeah. You want to say one of the most dominating runs in the tournament? Maybe. But that's easy to say without doing any research. I mean, you can throw a dart anywhere. You can shoot it blindly and say you hit a bullseye without opening your eyes. It's convenient. If nobody's around, by the way, it's convenient to make a prediction, but if nobody's around to hear it and you don't say it out loud, how does anybody know you made a prediction? But after the fact, you can say, oh, I had it right. No. Did you? Well, that's convenient.
Yeah.
So it's convenient when you can just sit there and automatically say as a fact and act like you're a judge on the whole thing, not the jury. Well, kind of like, he's guilty. Have you gathered the evidence and the facts yet? Oh, I haven't seen enough. You saw a news story? It couldn't have been like maybe, I don't know, misleading? Oh, that's it. I know that guy's guilty. Okay. That's the worst thing I've ever seen happen in the justice system. Really? Did you see what happened last week? We overreact. It's just a knee-jerk reaction. So when we sit here after a championship game last night, we're going, okay, Baylor's going to have a dynasty. Baylor's the team that's going to rule the Big 12 for the next 10, 20 years. KU's struggling recruiting, and they have the cloud of investigation over their head. And Tech lost Chris Beard. And Baylor's just going to – Cade Cunningham's living at Oklahoma State. Long Kruger's left Oklahoma. Baylor's going to be the team that's going to roll in the Big 12 for the next decade. And you know what? Might be right. But that's a long way off, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, when Bill Self and KU won a title in 2008, you know what I heard from KU fans? Oh, Bill's going to win. Bill's going to win 3 or 4 national championships. He's 58 now. And Bill hasn't even, he hasn't won a national championship. He's only been to one since 08. And he lost that in 12 to Kentucky. He's only been to the Final Four a couple of times since then, 2012 and 2018. He didn't get into the Final Four. So we automatically say it. Aaron Rodgers and the Packers as a sixth seed win the Super Bowl against the Steelers. Rodgers was 27 years of age. I remember all the talk after the Super Bowl. This team had so many injuries, they just get healthy, and they're the team to beat next year. I'll take the Packers versus the field. And I'm like, I'll take the field. Packers, they've never made it back since to the Super Bowl with some really good teams. The Chiefs are going to win four Super Bowls with Patrick Mahomes. Maybe they will. But pump the brakes after you get blown out in Super Bowl 55, right?
Yeah.
It's the same thing here. Gonzaga had a bad night. Baylor was a tough matchup. Gonzaga had the quick turnaround. Baylor was ready to go, and we're playing the best basketball of anybody in this tournament. Gonzaga looked great against USC. They did. But they didn't look so great against UCLA. UCLA was an athletic team. They had matchup problems, Gonzaga did, guarding Juzang and others. They had matchup problems last night. All this talk about how great Gonzaga's defense was after the USC game, and we talked about how it was really good. But I remember we actually talked about how that has been a liability for them this year as we went back and looked at some of the scores. And I think it might have caught up to them a little bit. But at the end of the day, it's a great win for Baylor. It's good for the Big 12 if you're into waving the flag for the conference. Sometimes I fully don't get that. Like, you've made fun of Baylor all these years. You said, yeah, Scott Drew is a horrible coach. All of a sudden now you're sitting there going, Scott Drew is a class act. Scott Drew's a great coach. And Baylor's just, I'm so glad they won for the Big 12. Like, what are you talking about? Like, is it good for the conference that another team besides KU wins the national championship? I guess. Do you think KU, does that help KU's recruiting? Does anybody in the Big 12 benefit recruiting-wise because Baylor won the national championship? Please help me with that. Because if anything, that gives Baylor a leg up on all the rest in the Big 12 to say, come here, we won a national title. Look at the fun way we play. It's the same argument. Oh, I really hope KU and KU, I'm a K-State fan, but I really hope KU does well. I'm a KU fan, and I really hope K-State does well. No, you don't. And if you do, then you're really not a diehard for the other side after all. Oh, I'm a nice person. I cheer for the state schools. I want the Shockers to do well, too. Whatever. Shockers, fine. I cheer for the Shockers. Good. Dusty's a K-State fan. Do you think Dusty's like, I really hope KU really does well in football so that we have a great K-State-KU football game? No! Dusty, I'll speak for him. He wants K-State to beat KU 60-0.
Every year.
Every year. And why would you want that? Because you are the superior program, and you have an edge in recruiting, especially for state kids. Do you want to go to, and this is how you recruit, if you're Chris Klieman or even Bill Snyder or back in the day, you want to go to Kansas. You're thinking about Kansas? Look at us. We're going to bowl games. Kansas is, they get a new coach every other year. Why would you go to Kansas? They don't even have their own stuff cleaned up. We've got stability. We have athletic director in Gene Taylor. We've got Chris Klieman. We've got a program. We've got some tradition here. You know, KU had tradition way back, you know, Gale Sayers and all that. But no. Why would you want to go to KU? You can come here and win now. KU, look at the proof's in the pudding. They don't win any games. That's used against KU in recruiting. The same way KU, if they're ever going for the same guy, which is, here's the thing. KU
basketball's
and K-State,
way different.
Yes. KU and K-State football, they go for some of the same guys. KU should lose most of those arguments right now. In basketball, KU and K-State don't recruit the same guys. So it's really not a big advantage for KU or K-State. Now, K-State gets really, really good. Now, a top-flight recruit may consider K-State, and KU is sitting there going, well, you know, we used to always get that guy, but now we got to compete against K-State because they're better. And there's a reason why, if you're a big KU fan and a diehard, you don't cheer for K-State to get better in men's basketball. Now, as me as a fan, would I like to see KU and K-State football games be more competitive? Yes. Would I like to see KU and K-State men's basketball games be more competitive? Yes. But I know who I would want to win. Dusty knows who he would want to win. But at the same time, am I going to feel bad if KU beats K-State by 30 in men's basketball? Is Dusty going to feel bad that K-State beats KU by 60 in football? No. No, because you keep that other program at bay. You keep them where they're at. So when people sit here and start pumping their chest, and even KU fans, woo-hoo, Big 12, baby! You don't get to hold that trophy in Allen Fieldhouse. You think people still want to rejoicing because Baylor won the national championship? No. So I just get tired of that. Like, there's even, like, TV reporters and radio people and sports talk people like, well, it's really good for the Big 12. That's fine. But Kansas is competing against the other nine institutions in the Big 12, as is K-State. So when KU, a perennial power, is recruiting, it used to be, come to Kansas. Kansas wasn't competing against the Big 12.
No.
They're competing against Duke and Kentucky and Michigan State for top flight recruits. But when all of a sudden Texas Tech makes it to the national championship game 2 years ago and Baylor wins it all this year, now Kansas doesn't have that advantage when they go into somebody's house and say, hey, listen, the only team you're going to win a title with in the Big 12 is Kansas.
Yeah.
You know why I know that? Because you got to go all the way back to the 40s, the last time a Big 12 institution, which at that time wasn't Big 12, of course, Big 8, Big 6, last won a title other name Kansas. Kansas had that argument until last night. And you're sitting here, Rock Chalk Jayhawk fan, you're putting stuff on Twitter, and I've seen it. Oh, way to go, Big 12, and Baylor is the greatest, and we beat Baylor. Well, whoop de freaking lottie do. You beat Baylor in a regular season game, but who is cutting down the nets in Indianapolis? Who's raising the trophy? Who has as many national championships as Bill Self? I know, Scott Drew. And that's not good for KU recruiting. It is not good if they're going after the same guy. Now, if they're going after different people, it doesn't even matter. But when they're going after the same guy, Scott Drew can say, listen, you want to go to Kansas? There might be probation. You might not get to play in the postseason. We were just on the national stage. Look at the fun that we have and the camaraderie, and we're family, and we built something at Baylor from the ground up. The ground up. Bill Self inherited a great program. We built it from crud. There was a murder on campus, for crying out loud, that the previous coach covered up. I mean, Scott Drew, it is the greatest rebuild in college basketball history. Note, I said college basketball history.
Mm-hmm.
Some people tend to overreact by not listening carefully. If you want to sit here and say that was the greatest college rebuild ever, you're wrong. Because I think, maybe not wrong. K-State football, I think, is the greatest rebuild in the history of sports, in college sports especially. But I agree that when you talk about college basketball, women or men's, I think you have to say Scott Drew and Baylor is the greatest rebuild in history. Based on what he inherited in 2003, and he was made fun of. We even said on the show he's not a good coach. He made some boneheaded decisions in some of those years as a Baylor head coach. Even when he had good teams, he was stubborn for a while and played zone all the time, and then finally got the guys he wanted, and now look what they do with their man-to-man, and they can still go to zone. Scott Drew evolved as a head coach. He got better, and he got better at recruiting. And when you start winning, it's easier to recruit, correct? Now you win a national championship. You don't think it's easier for Baylor to recruit now? It is. It was easier for Texas Tech to get. You think Max McClung is going to come to Texas Tech if they were what they once were? Probably not. So when you sit here and you say, yay for the Big 12, I get it that you want the Big 12 to win. But for me, I wasn't worried about the Big 12 winning. I didn't even care about the conference affiliation. Because the Big 12, they can brag and say, we won a national championship as a conference. But the trophy only resides in one institution, and that's Waco, Texas, and Baylor. Kansas's national championship trophy in 2008, correct me if I'm wrong, it is not in Ramlage Coliseum on display, is it?
No.
No. So I think it is kind of silly when we sit here and go nuts about, ooh, the Big 12, way to go, Big 12. Is it better than the Big 10 winning it? I guess. Maybe that's your point. But if you are a fan of any institution in the Big 12, especially a team that's fighting Baylor for superiority of the conference. Like, maybe K-State fan, you're all good with it because you know you can't compete against Baylor, and you couldn't until that last tourney game, which Baylor still wasn't a full strength, we know that. But K-State played better later in the year. But if you're a K-State fan or Iowa State fan, and you're sitting here bragging about how you played Baylor close, and you're sitting here saying, you know, I'm glad Baylor won and it's great for the Big 12. Okay, I understand that a little bit because you're not even close to competing with Baylor to win a conference title right now. You're not even close to the conversation. You're not even in the arena right now. That might change in a few years. But if you're Kansas, if you're Oklahoma, if you're Texas, if you're Oklahoma State, if you're Texas Tech, basically the seven teams have made it to the tournament out of the Big 12, this is not a good thing for you. I mean, it helps to say the Big 12, we play great basketball here, we're a bona fide conference, but that doesn't make a kid choose. They don't choose Kansas because Kansas is a member of the Big 12. They don't choose Baylor because they're a member of the Big 12. They choose, in some cases, they choose where the hot girls are. In some cases, they choose who they love as a coach. Some cases, they choose maybe it is their actual education where they can get a degree and they're smart in that. Or they go where they think they can play right away. Or they go where they want to win. But a lot of times, we're talking now, let's pigeonhole this. Let's talk about the top flight recruits in America. Where do they want to go? They want to be seen. They want to be seen. They need exposure. And then when they're seen, then they can make a splash and maybe make a lot of money going to the NBA. Top flight recruits right now used to be there was only one destination that you went to when it came to Big 12 basketball, and that was the University of Kansas. That has changed over the last few years. Texas Tech's getting some bigger recruits. They're getting some of the bigger transfers, and Baylor now is going to benefit from this. You just watch. They will. Texas will benefit by having Chris Beard there because he can sit here and go, I went to the national championship with Texas Tech, and now I'm at Texas, and I have even more resources. Mm-hmm. So that'll help him. Even make a national championship game is good for these institutions. Of course, any team in any conference that can go deep in the tournament, like Oral Roberts, it's good for their recruiting that they went deep into the tournament. Yeah. What helps you so much is if you win on a regular basis, that helps in recruiting, but it also helps that you're a big-time university. You get a lot of TV exposure, and certainly Kansas does, and now Baylor's going to get even more. But when you do it on a national stage in front of everyone and you beat a team that was undefeated, that is, it might be the very top of the mountain for Baylor, and they may stumble and they may fall and they may not ever get back there ever again. But when you as a Jayhawk fan, and I'm talking to you Jayhawk fans out there, when you sit here and brag and pump your chest that Baylor and the Big 12 won a national championship, I'm worried about you. Because you should be mad as you know what that Baylor won the title. Mm-hmm. You should be upset Baylor won the title. You should be worried that Baylor won the title. And you should be probably worried that Chris Beard went to Texas. And you should be worried about the investigation and the cloud over your head. And yes, you got a new athletic director, more on in a moment. But you should be concerned because this is not your conference to rule anymore. You might rule it at times, but you're not going to win 14 in a row ever again, probably, in conference championships. And maybe that's good for Kansas in some ways. You know, it helps to show that the Big 12, and that'll help prepare Kansas for the NCAA tournament more so than in some years where they roll through the conference winning 14, you know, 14 and 2 or 15 and 1 or whatever, you know, 17 and 1 or before they had the double round robin, they went 16-0 one year. I mean, maybe this will be beneficial to KU that there's big-time teams in the conference besides Kansas that can win a national championship, but it does not help on the recruiting trail. When you go into Texas trying to get a top-flight kid from Texas, Kansas could get those kids before. It's a little harder now because of the problems Kansas is dealing with or the cloud over their head, but also now you amplify that by Chris Beard and what he did at Texas Tech. Now he's going to Texas, and then you see what Scott Drew and Baylor has done. I'm sorry, Jayhawk fans. You should not be all excited that Baylor won the national championship.
There's no I see that a lot from K-State, KU, whoever it was last night. Like, this is great for the Big 12. And it's like,
is it good for your school?
Okay, I think that's a quick reactionary take because usually this is Kansas, right? Mm-hmm. It's great to see somebody other than Kansas doing something like this, I think is what they're saying, right?
Right?
But this is not great for the Big 12. There's nothing good about it for the Big 12 as a whole, other than the Big 12 as a conference can claim we had the national champion, right? You know, they like to claim they had back-to-back Heisman Trophy winners. No, Oklahoma had back-to-back Heisman Trophy winners, not the Big 12.
Right.
And it's like you kind of look at it, and obviously the conference, when they're tweeting out, is going to really claim this and be excited about it. But there's nothing – what's good about the team that won the conference by 5 games winning the national championship for the other 9 schools in the Big 12? Absolutely nothing.
Exactly.
There is nothing good about that.
No.
There's nothing that helps the Big – what are you going to do? Go into some guy's home and say, hey,
our
come to K-State. Baylor won the national championship, and you get to play that team.
The national championship trophy resides in our conference.
We won our league by 5 games, but come play at K-State so you can play against Baylor in Kansas. There's nothing that comes out as a conference out of that.
No.
Now, you can say, hey, Baylor turned this around in the Big 12 conference, and that's what we're trying to do here at K-State.
Yes.
That's what we're trying to do here at Iowa State. That's what we're trying to do. We've started doing it at Texas Tech. We're going to take Chris Beard's lead, and we're going to keep going the same way.
Mm-hmm.
Chris Beard can say, we started to do it at Texas Tech. I'm coming here to do it here in Austin.
Yeah.
But there's nothing that says, oh, Baylor won the championship, so come play in our league. That's not the process of anything. And, I mean, we could sit here and say, yeah, this year was a good look for the Big 12, and I can wholeheartedly disagree because the champion won the conference by 5 games.
Mm-hmm.
Middle of the pack, great year for the Big 12.
Right.
Not even middle of the pack, toward the top, because the champion won the dang thing by 5 games. There's
right.
6, 6, 6, and 7 losses coming up after that, right?
Which, does that always, people want to say, well, that means the conference is really tough. I'd always argue that means that you have a lot of similar teams.
Yeah, and I...
Which, maybe they're all great, or maybe they're all, you know, above average, but not great.
This ended up being another one of those years for the Big 12, right?
Yes.
Where we talk about one team's above the rest.
And that's how it's been with
Baylor instead of Kansas this year, but it's like one team's above the rest. How good is this conference really?
Mm-hmm. Well,
so,
the Big 12 was completely out after the first round, except for Baylor.
They won one game in the second round.
If it's not for Baylor, the Big 12 would be made fun of right now. Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's a great point. It's a great point.
This has nothing to do with the Big 12, other than the fact that Baylor is in the Big 12.
That's it. Yeah, I don't understand people doing that. I just don't. It's just, to me, I don't get it. I really don't. And like I said before, I don't get when you sit and go, I really wish KU was better in football. I really wish K-State was better in basketball. But you're a fan of the other team. I don't get that. Because that means I guess I do get it. It means you're not really a diehard one.
I wish David Beatty was still KU's football coach.
And I'm sure people wish Ron Prince was K-State's football coach, you know? And they wish
that's the normal reaction to something like that.
Wish Ted Owens was still a coach at KU, you know? So, and whatever, but man. Okay, the other knee-jerk reaction by people, and I'm talking media mainly, and then fans do it too, but the media adds to it. After the UCLA-Gonzaga game on Saturday, which was an amazing game, don't get me wrong, and when it was over, I said out loud, because I was at family, that was one of the greatest games I've ever seen. I didn't say it was the greatest. I said that was one of the greatest games I've ever seen. That's one of the best games I've seen in a while. And then, but what people tend to do is they automatically say, that's the greatest game I've ever seen, and they don't even stop to think about what happened prior to this in your life to get to this point. How many games have you watched in your life? So once the game was over and I was lying in bed trying to think about that, the first game that popped in my head immediately was Duke and Kentucky, 1992, because Leitner shot, and that clinched the spot to go to the Final Four. It was an amazing game. I watched that whole game when I was younger. I was 16. That game was tight all the way through. It was an amazing game, and there were great shots left and right. And then, of course, the game-winning shot was improbable, although it wasn't a lucky shot. It was a turnaround by Leitner. It was a bad defensive set there by Kentucky. They didn't guard the inbounder, which was Grant Hill, by the way. And he threw it all the way down to Leitner. Leitner made a nice play, makeable shot. He made it. And Duke won and punched their ticket to the Final Four. The next game I think of in regards to an unbelievable game, I think about NCAA tournament stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So my next thought was North Carolina-Villanova,
which
was 2016, 5 years ago. I mean, that was a great game. That was a tight game back and forth. There were great shots made in that game. And Marcus Page make a double-clutching three-pointer. The North Carolina tied it, and you thought you're going to overtime. Villanova called the timeout, set up a great play, and then Jenkins trailing the play, hits the three, and wins it at the buzzer. It was a buzzer beater for the national championship. You know, Jalen Suggs, you know, heave, and he lined it up. That wasn't, people say it's a lucky shot. I don't think it was that lucky of a shot. I mean, I think there's some luck involved because he banked it. But if you shoot any shot with your momentum going forward from that far out, more than likely it's going to be a banker. It's not going to swish.
Mm-hmm.
So Suggs has shot that shot many times. So I think it's a little bit disparaging towards Jalen Suggs to say it was pure luck. And so he shot it. He lined it up. He banked it in. Gonzaga wins to punch their ticket to the national championship game. But the Villanova game winner was won the national championship. Mm-hmm. Another person says, well, in regards to unbelievable shots, Mario Chalmers' three for Kansas in 08. And, yeah, that was an amazing shot. And that was not a game winner. That was a game saver. Okay? That was a game saver because then KU won in overtime. All right? If he doesn't make the shot, they don't win at all. That's true. But they didn't win it on his shot. They had to play 5 minutes overtime, and Kansas won. He saved the day. I could go back to many plays before that to save that game as well, including the Sherron Collins three-pointer, okay? And the steal and saved it or whatever, in the corner. Remember that great save by Sherron Collins? Lots of things you can go on and talk about. But then I saw people, and including Jayhawk fans, well, one guy said, UCLA Gonzaga is not even in my top 10 of greatest games of all time, and he put KU Memphis at number 9. KU Memphis was a dud until 2:12 remained in that game. You know how I know that? Because I watched it a third time about a month ago. Mm-hmm. That game was boring to watch because Memphis was in control. Kansas couldn't do much offensively. And then all of a sudden, with 2:12 to go, Kansas found a way to come back. And what made that game a classic was the comeback in the final 2:12 and the Chalmers shot. But overtime, honestly, was all Kansas. There wasn't a lot of drama in overtime once KU scored the first couple buckets. That didn't come down to the last-second shot in overtime. That game was not anywhere near my top 10 of all-time games. Now, if you want to talk about greatest shots in tournament history, Chalmers probably might fit in the top 10. Probably so. Probably one of the top 10 shots. But what are we talking about? Are we talking about the greatest shots in tournament history? Are we talking about the greatest games in tournament history? Or are we talking about the greatest games of all time, period? Because I'm going to give you a few others. So Nova and North Carolina, to me, has got to be right there near the top.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Because that was a great game from start to finish. Kentucky Duke in 92, with all the NBA players that were in that game, that was unbelievable shot-making, and that final was 104-103 in overtime, and that was a classic, and that put one team in the Final Four, the other team done on a buzzer beater. Nova won the national championship. Roy Williams denied at the buzzer after North Carolina thought they had, you know, forced overtime. UCLA Gonzaga, that was a phenomenal game the other night on Saturday. That is one of the greatest games I've seen. Let me repeat, one of the greatest games I've ever seen. UCLA, the shots they made, I never thought they could roll with Gonzaga and score that many points. I never thought they could. I don't think anybody did. Gonzaga, with the plays they had to make, the Suggs block and then save and then pass, unbelievable to Timmy for a dunk. That was a 4-point swing. Incredible play. There was some big clutch time plays by Timmy. Timmy taking the charge, which I did think it was a charge, and I still sit here, if I'm Juzang, I don't know how many times in that game he would stop and pull up and shoot that shot from about 10, and this time he went too far. If he would have stopped instead of going another step or two, I think UCLA wins that game. And I think UCLA is playing Baylor for the national championship. But he went a hair too far. Give Timmy credit. He took the charge. And then, of course, that set up to heroics later on because UCLA gets the follow by Juzang, tie it, and then Suggs knows exactly what he's doing, caught the ball, no timeouts, a dribble per second. He knew it. Long dribble strides, got the ball immediately out of the bucket. They got it to him, and it's hard to match up with no timeouts. And UCLA, all they got to do defensively, put their arms up. They don't want to foul. You foul the guy, he gets three free throws and makes one to win the game. You can't foul in that situation. Mm-hmm. You put your arms straight up, UCLA guy did, and you just go, well, what a great shot. And it was a great way, unbelievable way to win a game. It's a horrible way if you're a UCLA fan. By the way, I saw a lot of people are ecstatic about the win. I said, you know what? It is. It's pretty awesome if you're cheering for Gonzaga. You're a Zags fan, but what about the other side? If you're a KU fan or a K-State fan, aren't you really, like, completely in the dumps if that's your team that lost on that shot?
Oh, yeah.
I felt for UCLA because they played great and still lost. That's how good Gonzaga is. UCLA played unbelievable, and they still lost to Gonzaga. That was a great game, but I'll give you a few others that people don't think about. And these are just more regional ones. You're with me?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to save one for the last. KU in Oklahoma in 2016, it was number one KU versus number two Oklahoma at Allen Fieldhouse. Remember that Buddy Hield went nuts?
Mm-hmm.
Frank Mason with clutch plays. There were some NBA players in that game. And KU won in not single or double overtime, triple overtime. Number one versus number two in the country at Allen Fieldhouse. It was a classic. KU won 109-106. If you're going to talk about some of the greatest games of all time, that's worth mentioning, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Wasn't a tournament game, though. Season wasn't on the line. K-State and Xavier, That game in 2010, I saw the replay of it, I think not too long last year because of COVID.
Yeah.
That was a phenomenal game. Sweet 16 game, season's on the line. K-State won in double overtime, 101-96. Plays by Clemente and by Pullen, and I mean, just the plays that both teams made. Xavier kept making threes to keep the game going. It was an insanely, unbelievably great game. That was a Sweet 16 game. Kansas-Oklahoma was an overtime, triple overtime game in the regular season. I gave you five examples, and trust me, ladies and gentlemen, if you're a big-time college basketball fan, I'm sure you got a lot of other great ones. You might go back to NC State-Houston, which, you know, Villanova-Georgetown national championship when Villanova played basically a perfect game. You can go back to NC State-Houston back when David Thompson played. The games I didn't see that I'm not old enough to have seen. So you can only talk about the games you've seen in your lifetime. But if you're somebody old enough to have seen these games I just mentioned, it's a really, that's why it's knee-jerk reaction is really, you can do whatever you want. It's a free country. But when people immediately say after UCLA-Gonzaga, that's the greatest game that's ever been played, first of all, it's not a fact because you said it. Two, that's your opinion. Three, you actually probably should save that comment until you actually think back for a moment and think about other unbelievable games. If you want to talk about the greatest shot in college men's basketball tournament history, it's got to be Jenkins winning it at the buzzer.
That's what I said yesterday.
It's got to be.
Everybody has that reaction. Was this the best buzzer beater in tournament history?
No.
And it's like a dude won the national title 5 years ago on a buzzer beater.
Yes.
Like this wasn't, you talk about recency bias, right?
Right.
This wasn't like years and years and years ago this happened. It's still fresh in my mind.
Absolutely.
And I'm like, nah, I don't think so, man. It took him to the championship game. That won the championship.
Nova won the championship on that shot. It was it. Game was over. You know, the only one that would have beat it would have been if Gordon Hayward's half-court shot went in. I was there to watch that against Duke. And that thing, Duke missed the free throw on purpose. And Hayward, I was behind the goal up higher, and I saw that shot go up with my sister-in-law, and we both thought it was going in. And it barely was off. Now, that would have been the greatest of all time. But you know what's interesting? Had Gordon Hayward hit that championship shot from half-court to beat Duke, that had been David slaying Goliath, and that was in Butler's backyard in Indianapolis in 2010. Mm-hmm. And people would have said that's the greatest game that ever happened because of the shot. And I'm here to tell you, I watched that game in person. I paid good money to watch that game in person. And that game was a defensive grinder. Mm-hmm. And it was not a great game, a pleasing to the eyes offensively. Now, if you love grinders, then that might have been the greatest game of all time had Hayward made that three from half court. That would have been the greatest shot, no doubt.
Yeah.
Better than Suggs and better than Jenkins. But when you're talking about the greatest shot in college basketball tournament history, to me, I don't know how you can't go with the one that won a national title at the buzzer. And that's the only national title game that I'm aware of that was won directly at the buzzer.
Yeah.
You know, Keith Smart's shot for Indiana against Syracuse 87 was huge, obviously. Chalmers shot to tie the game in overtime for KU. We talked about that. I had one at the tip of my tongue.
Jordan had a pretty good one.
That was the other one. In 82, Jordan against Georgetown with the baseline jumper, although there was still like 10, 12 seconds to play in that one. You know, those are iconic shots. So if you're arguing what's the greatest shot in college basketball history in the tournament, to me, you still got to go with Jenkins winning it all. And Suggs is probably right there. Maybe it's number two. Maybe it's number five. I don't know. But for somebody to sit here and tell me that KU Memphis or Duke Butler were better games than Gonzaga UCLA, I'm sorry. You were watching different games. You don't remember those games very well. You
there was not a Butler game that was played, no matter win or loss, that was one of the best games I've ever watched in the NCAA.
Butler
That's
always,
who they were under Brad Stevens.
They muddied it up.
Played defense. They were executed. They were very methodical in what they did, and that's how they won a lot of games.
Exactly. So we get caught up in the ending. And that's when you sit here and anybody says, well, KU Memphis was one of the greatest games of all time. Well, first of all, if you're a KU fan, of course you think it's great because your team won a national title. But if you actually watch that as a regular basketball fan, watching the quality of play and how that game was, and by the way, Kansas won the game. One of the big reasons they won the game because Memphis clanked free throws.
Exactly.
Gonzaga and UCLA, Nova, North Carolina, teams weren't missing shots. They were making shots. Okay? Now, Duke Butler, they were clanking shots, so that's why I don't put that one up there as high. But if Hayward would have made the half-court shot, that would have been considered one of the greatest teams, games of all time, only because of the ending. Mm-hmm. Only because of the ending. As we talked about before, Chalmers' shot isn't remembered that well if KU loses in overtime to Memphis. Mm-hmm. Just like the Alabama guy who hit the three-pointer to tie against UCLA, it's not going to be remembered, nor is Marcus Page's shot against Villanova very well because their teams didn't win. Even though their shots forced the game to continue, it did not win the game. Eventually, KU did in their situation. But, you know, if I'm going to rank greatest games of all time, I mean, like I said, KU Oklahoma in 2016 was an amazing game. Regular season game. Mm-hmm. Won't be considered by anybody for the greatest game of all time, right? Because it wasn't a tournament game. So here's the thing. What's the argument? That's my question. What's your argument? If your argument is the greatest game of all time, then we need to start thinking and considering regular season games.
Yeah.
If your argument is the greatest NCAA tournament game of all time, then let's just focus on the NCAA tournament. If your argument is the greatest shot in the history of the tournament, that's a whole different argument as well. You see where I'm going with this?
Oh, yeah,
it's like we so blur the lines when we're trying to talk about greatness. We just immediately go, you know, we don't remember what happened last week, but we remember what happened 2 minutes ago. We don't remember what we said 2 minutes ago, but we remember what we just said 30 seconds ago. Duh, that's just human nature. But those were all amazing games. Kentucky, Duke, North Carolina, Villanova, and UCLA, Gonzaga, I put those three as the top three that I can think of right off the bat. And I'm going to tell you something. I right now would put K-State Xavier as number four in regards to how close, how tight those games were, what was on the line, and how they were really well played and guys making shots left and right the whole game. KU Memphis, that did not take place until the final 2:12 for KU when they started making shots. So I don't put KU Memphis anywhere near the greatest. I'm just nowhere close to the top 10 in regards to the greatest games of all time played or greatest tournament games. Now, I was happy when it happened. It was, now let's go to another argument. Is that the greatest tournament comeback in the history of the tournament? No, it's not in regards to points. But based on the championship and the moment and being down 9 with 2:12 to play, you can argue KU had the greatest comeback in NCAA tournament history. That would be inaccurate because there are teams that come back from more than 9 and 1. Gonzaga, if they came back one last night down 19, that would have been quite the story, right? Mm-hmm. To finish a perfect season. So it just really depends on what you're talking about. You'll never convince somebody otherwise. Like we said, if you're a Jordan fan, you're not going to convince a LeBron fan to say Jordan's the greatest. You all are entitled to your opinions. But if you're really talking about a game, the greatest game, if that key word is game, if you're talking about the greatest game that you've ever seen, the greatest game that's ever been played, then I'm sorry, UCLA Gonzaga is not the greatest of all time. It is in the discussion. And then you can make up your own opinions. But it just is amazing to me, media people that have been in the business for a very long time help perpetuate what society says. Because that's the first thing they throw out on social media. That's the greatest game I've ever seen. That's what you've seen. It doesn't mean it's the greatest of all time. That's what you've seen. And it was an amazing game, don't get me wrong. And the ending was crazy. And for anybody to say, well, that's not one of the greatest games because it was an unlucky shot, well, that's just dumb. Okay? It doesn't matter if it was lucky or not. It was an amazing, amazing game. And it definitely, for me, ranks right up there with North Carolina Villanova championship game buzzer beater for the title by Nova. It ranks right up there with the Leitner game against Duke and Kentucky. Those three stand out to me. And you know why they stand out so much? First of all, we see that shot replayed over and over between Kentucky and Duke. And there was two blue bloods going at it for a chance to move on to the Final Four. And North Carolina Villanova, the reason we remember that one so well, and it was a great game, was it's the buzzer beater at the end. But that was a great game from start to finish. Mm-hmm. It was tight. UCLA Gonzaga, that was tight all the way through. Back and forth, back and forth. Guys making shots after shots. K-State Xavier didn't come down to a buzzer beater, right? And it was a little earlier in the tournament. That was a Sweet 16, not an Elite Eight like Duke, Kentucky, not a national title game like Villanova, Carolina, not a Final Four like UCLA, Gonzaga. But that game was every bit as good as some of these others because you talk about, oh, my gosh, that game had so many ups and downs and unbelievable shots, shot-making by both teams. And I can say the same about KU Oklahoma in a regular season game in Allen Fieldhouse, Buddy Hield versus Frank Mason. So there are always a ton of great games, and I left a ton of them off, folks. I just gave you a list that I have, and I maybe haven't even thought it all the way through. There might be other games I'm leaving off here, but those are the ones I can think of off the top of my head that were great from start to finish. K-State Xavier in 2010, double overtime, Sweet 16 thriller, UCLA Gonzaga Final Four, Kentucky Duke Regional Final in 92, and UNC Nova Championship buzzer beater in 16. Do you have one that I left out you can think of off the top of your head?
Not really. Those are most of the ones that I remember too, right?
Mm-hmm.
The thing about K-State Xavier is people outside of Manhattan and Cincinnati
right.
don't care.
There's not. They weren't blue bloods.
Yeah,
if that
exactly.
was Duke, Kentucky,
exactly.
that'd rank higher,
that's
wouldn't
why
it?
We're talking about these games, right? Is because they're different teams. You know, that was just one round later between Duke and Kentucky. And, you know, everybody's going to say that, but nobody's going to talk about K-State Xavier because those teams aren't
exactly
sexy.
Right.
They're not blue bloods. They're not teams that people focus on. So I think out of this area, we remember that, and I remember that's without question the best K-State basketball game I've ever watched. They're, I mean,
amazing game.
You can't even put it in any other kind of perspective other than, you know, the joy of maybe beating KU and for the first time in Bramlage Coliseum in however long. But as far as an actual game, that's the best one. But no, I can't think of any other ones.
So. Don't get me wrong, though. Those yeah. games like UCLA Gonzaga, they rarely come around. You got to enjoy them. That's why I don't think people should get caught up in. I don't think people should get caught up in right after the game, arguing on social media about what's the greatest game. Just enjoy it.
Enjoy what you just saw. Yeah.
Wait till you know. We can wait till Monday or the day after, or even Tuesday, like I am now, to talk about it. But I think right after the game, the point of it is enjoy what a great basketball game we had because we had no tournament last year.
Yeah.
All right, changing to Royals baseball. Whit Merrifield on fire. Royals off to a 3-1 start.
That is crushed to left field. And Whit Merrifield goes up into the bleachers, way up into the bleachers, on a 3-0 pitch. Allen knew it, Perez knew it, and Whit knew it. And the Royals get two outs in the second inning.
Royals win it. They are tied atop the division at 3-1 with the Twins. Danny Duffy, 6 innings of shutout ball. He usually pitches well against Cleveland, especially up in Cleveland. Royals starters had not been good the first three games, even though they won 2 out of 3 against Texas. But Duffy saved the bullpen a little bit, and the Royals get an off day today. Witt with 3 homers already this season, batting .500, hit the 2-run homer for the 2-0 lead there early in the game in the second inning yesterday as the Royals beat the Indians 3-0. Whit Merrifield, let's see here. 3 homers through 4 games. The first player in franchise history with homers 3 times within the team's first 4 games. The second Royal to record an extra base hit in each of the team's first 4 games, joining Amos Otis in 1982. Merrifield is also the 8th player since 1901 to do that as a second baseman and the first since Houston's Bill Doran in 1989, which would be 32 years ago. So Witt's doing some amazing stuff. You know, the Royals bullpen's off to a pretty good start as well. The only thing that's been the problem is starting pitching. And yesterday, Duffy gave them a great start. Royals have today off. They'll be back in action tomorrow against the Indians or the Cleveland baseball team. It'll be Shane Bieber, who's a reigning AL Cy Young Award winner for the Indians tomorrow. And that will be at 12:10 tomorrow afternoon. And the Royals probably going to go a piecemeal thing. Maybe Irvin Santana will start. Maybe Jacob Junis, whatever they may do, and work from there and use a bullpen by committee to get through that game tomorrow from what I've been reading. They have not determined a starter. We'll have more on that coming up tomorrow morning. Ryan LaFever, the voice of the Royals, will be with us tomorrow at 9:30 to talk Royals baseball as the Royals are off to a nice start. North Carolina's found a successor for their head coach behind Roy Williams now that he's retired, and it's Hubert Davis. That's who Roy Williams recommended for the job. There are reports that multiple North Carolina players actually wanted Wes Miller, maybe more than Hubert Davis, but Roy Williams' recommendation carried a lot of weight. Why wouldn't mm-hmm. it? Roy's a Hall of Famer, 903 wins, 3 national championships at North Carolina, and he recommended Hubert Davis. Hubert Davis, who was an NBA player, a very good college player as well at North Carolina. He is Tar Heel, born and bred, and he, after 9 years of being an assistant, will get the head coaching position at North Carolina, taking over for Roy Williams. Also, KU has a new athletic director. He's a 2002 graduate, University of Kansas, Travis Goff. He's a native of Dodge City. He's been named the school's new athletic director. He becomes the 5th AD hired by Kansas since the late Bob Frederick retired in 2001. He is a native Kansan, Jayhawk alum, and he's thrilled to return to Lawrence with his family. And he starts right away. He'll be formally introduced here tomorrow at 10 o'clock. And by the way, you wonder about payment and contract terms. And K-State, here, K-State fans, please listen up. When you, any of you getting all riled up about what Gene Taylor got and made with his extension, do you know that Gene Taylor, everything he's accomplished at Kansas State, and I think he's done a nice job, but Gene Taylor, he's still making less with his extension and raise, is still making less than Travis Goff, who has never been the athletic director of any institution until tomorrow. Because what's Taylor's extension? His raise went to what, 600 and some thousand?
I thought it was in the million range by now. Because
Gene Taylor went to a million?
Extension.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, what was his previous pay? That was 600,000?
Somewhere around there, yeah. Because okay. It was going to be 660 this okay. next year, but so, that's why they did the
okay, so let, well, look that up real fast. But yeah. Travis Goff will start out making more money
than he should have made this year. Yeah.
Yeah, well, he's going to start out making more money in his first AD job than Gene Taylor made in his first contract with K-State University.
And
Taylor had more experience. Now, Goff has served as deputy.
It's 925 on the
now
first
for
one.
Taylor yeah. with yeah. his new extension.
I knew it was somewhere close
before
to
before it was less than 700.
Yeah.
It was 6-something, I think.
Yeah.
So he was, what was he, the deputy? There you go. Deputy AD at Northwestern. He oversaw football, volleyball, and baseball. He played a big role in the Wildcats' fundraising efforts, which yielded $440 million since the time of his arrival. Brian Haney, the voice of Jayhawks, has told us, and we'll see if we have him on coming up on Thursday to talk about this. He said that he thought it was very important that the athletic director had ties to Kansas. He said, football coach, not so much. If that happens, so be it. But he felt very strongly that a tie to Kansas was important for the new athletic director. Because let's be honest, Jeff Long had no ties to Kansas. Neither did Les Miles. No. The only tie Les Miles had was Jeff Long. So I think this is probably the right move by Kansas. Bill Self seems to be ecstatic about it. I mean, some of the comments he's made here seem to be, and he's gone through some AD changes at Kansas, obviously, mm-hmm. since being the coach. And if Bill Self's happy, then people should probably be happy at KU. And Goff's only 41. So he could be AD there for
a
long time.
Yeah, graduated KU in 2002. I'm like, we're getting to this point, huh?
Yeah.
Where
yeah, guys that are younger than
graduated
us.
Graduated in this century are getting jobs as Power 5 ADs.
Yes, that's exactly where we're going with it, Dusty. I know. Makes you feel old, doesn't it? A couple other things here. Well, let's just go with the one thing that I can see, and that is Sam Darnold was traded from the Jets to the Panthers. The Panthers weren't going to go with Bridgewater. He wasn't the answer for them, apparently, as the future. And so the Panthers trade a sixth-round pick this year and a second-round pick next year and a fourth-round pick in 2022 for Sam Darnold. I think it's worth the risk. If that's a guy you believe in, you've done your homework and you like, and you don't have to give up a first round pick for a guy, and you got two picks. You've given up a second and a fourth in 2022. That's where you'll feel it this year, just a sixth round pick. And he's young. And I mean, if you believe that Sam Darnold's a guy that can be a really good quarterback in this league, then it makes sense to make the trade. If you believe he's going to be the same quarterback was in New York, then that's a horrible trade. So time will judge. We will judge. Because you can always judge a trade right when it happens, but we have no idea. Just like all these other guys that say they're experts. They have no idea if it's a great trade or not. We may look back at it and say, wow, the Panthers made the right trade and got a steal. And it was a better trade for the Panthers getting Darnold than it was for the Colts to get Wentz. Because right now, a lot of people still think the Colts got the better deal by getting Wentz than the Panthers did getting Darnold. Well, Darnold and Wentz are both young quarterbacks. Mm. They both might be great trades. They might both just blow up in their faces and both might be horrible. We have no idea. But the Panthers say, you know what? We like him. We didn't have to give a ton for him. I mean, they gave him some draft capital. They a young guy that's the future of their franchise. So we'll see if it works out. It's obviously worked out for the Chiefs. They gave up a lot to trade up. It was worth the gamble, right?
Yeah.
Obviously. Even though he's wearing a boot right now. And his picture with his new baby and his fiance. When are they getting married?
I don't even know.
I haven't got the invitation yet.
Yeah, no kidding.
I'm kind of disappointed.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.